Accession number 30,001, Peter Hurst, Rio 14. Now, we turn now to the operational side. Now, you made your first operational flight, according to your logbook, on the 5th of October, 1942, which was a tactical reconnaissance over the Alamein front, you know. Now, what do you remember? Let's look first. What about the whole aspect of flying over the desert, things like that?
I didn't find that any problem at all. First of all, the visibility is usually terrific out there. You don't get these big formations of cloud like you do over Europe. And it's always clear blue sky and visibility is endless. And the tactical reconnaissance was flying all around the front line. Excuse me, I'm going to cough. reporting anything that might be untoward.
Now, what height would you fly? Would you fly the same height as in Europe or lower?
Oh, no, lower.
Now, why would you fly lower?
Well, first of all, one of the reasons we were up in the front was to protect the troops from being dive-bombed. And the dive-bombers didn't operate at very high altitudes. They used to come over at about 8 or 9,000 feet and do a dive-bomb from there. But, of course, they had a fighter escort who were above them. And they used to go up to probably 12, 13,000 feet, just depending on what height the dive-bombers were. And we used to split our squadrons in our wing. In our Hurricane wing, there were four Hurricane squadrons. And we used to put two at a time up on these patrols. And one would be at a lower altitude looking for the dive bombers, and the other squadron would be about 5,000 feet higher looking for the fighters who might be covering the dive bombers. So that's the way we used to split ourselves up.
Now, anything happened on that first tactical reconnaissance?
No, I've got a note here. Nothing seen at all, but three 109s were reported. I didn't see them. I can't remember now whether they were reported by another pilot. I doubt that, because I think I would have seen them if that had been the case. Or it might have been from the ground, from the ground radar.
Now, the next big thing is on on the 9th of October, where there was a ground strafing of an airfield. I'm not sure which
airfield. Yes, Daba, D-A-B-A. And there were two or three airfields in that area. And it was right on the coastline. And they'd have one of these peculiar weather conditions where they had a very heavy rain. I think it was overnight. Certainly an awful lot of rain came down. And they were unable to operate their Messerschmitt 109s, rather like the Spitfire, with a narrow undercarriage and smallish wheels, and the desert, when it was totally waterlogged, it was just a quagmire, and they couldn't operate the Spitfires on the ground. They would like to get them into the air, but they were unable to. So our intelligence information got hold of this, and they decided it would be a good opportunity to try and destroy some of these aircraft while they were stuck on the ground. So the whole wing of four squadrons participated, number 33, number 213, 238, and number 1 South African Air Force. They were the four squadrons in our wing. And what we decided to do, we were based behind the line, we flew out, and Daba was about 50 or 60 miles behind the lines. We flew out to sea for about 10 miles, on literally at water level, just above the sea. And we were spread out in squadrons, and each one going in its turn. And I was in the lead squadron, and which was number 33 squadron. We went out about 10 miles over the sea, and then we turned due west for about 50 miles until we came to the Darba area. And then we turned in and crossed the coast from no height at all, just above the water. So that when we got to the escarpment, we could see the airfield, because we could see some aircraft parked on top. And as we got to the escarpment, then we had to pull up and then get a little bit of extra height so we'd come down and strafe the aircraft on the airfields there. So we were spread fairly wide, and one squadron after another was coming in, and I was in the lead squadron. Now, when we got to the escarpment, there were some tents on the Germans had put there, and some of their ground crew were living there. And I shall never forget it, as long as I was in lead flight, and this ridge tent, the flap opened, and a face came out with shaving cream all over his face. So I took a quick squirt at him, knocked him sideways, and then pulled up, and right in front of me, right on top of him, we couldn't weave because there were so many of us, so we had to just fly straight. And right on top of the escarpment, the airfield at the top, there was a small fuselage torch, which was a light travel, transport aircraft, only a single engine job, but and it was just right in front of me, so I had to take a shot at that, destroyed that, and then pulled up again, and then there were around the airfield ahead of us were these 109s that spread all around the place. So we couldn't weave at all. We just had to, if it was just fortunate that you had an aircraft in front of you, then you were lucky.
Now, just to make it clear, this fuselage torch was on the ground.
Oh, yes.
Make that clear again.
Yes, yes. Yes, it was perched on top of the hill there, on the escarpment.
Did it catch fire, or could you see, or did you not?
No, didn't see. It went straight over it. And I saw that it collapsed on it, and it sort of, well, I didn't see it catch fire, but I saw it fall to pieces.
What did you hit next then? Then it's all in a matter of seconds, isn't it?
Yeah, yes, yes. Then we went on, and then the other squadrons were coming in behind us, of course. So what we did, we didn't turn back out over the sea, go back there. We carried straight on and went to the Katara Depression, which was the southern end of the front. And that was where the ground activities ceased. They couldn't go beyond into the Katara Depression.
Now, did you get an ME-109 on the ground as well?
Yes. Now, I'll tell you what I've put here in my logbook as notes. Four squadrons participated, 33, 213, 238, and one South African Air Force. Very intense light flak and some heavy. 15 109s jumped us as we went in at 0 feet. Now, where those 109s came from, I don't know. They certainly weren't able to take off from
Darba. Well, when did they appear then?
Well, they jumped us as we went in.
They
must have been doing some practice flying. Must have been another airfield which wasn't waterlogged, which was not too far away. I put here 15 plus 109s jumped us as we went in at 0 feet. Bags of panic. I was hit in the fuselage behind the cockpit, and I destroyed one 109. One faceless torch and one tent. That we, on the 48 hurricanes that we had on that operation, and 9 pilots were missing. We had So they were shot down by Fleck, and some of them obviously must have been shot down by the 109s.
Now, did you see much of the 109s, or did they just fire at you and you were just carrying on the ground?
Well, they came down on us, and we didn't think that they would be there because we thought they were, all the 109s were waterlogged. But somewhere or other, some other 109s...
But what I mean is, what did you do? Because you couldn't take evasive action at
No. We just flew straight on, right on the deck.
So you just ignored them?
Ignored them. Just flew straight on, flat out, going due south, because the other squadrons were coming in behind us, so we couldn't cause a hold-up for them.
And the 109 you got, was that on the ground? You haven't mentioned that before.
Yes.
That was on the ground, not one of these air ones.
No.
Now, so the flight back, what happened there?
Well, then we went down south, clear over the Katara Depression, and then turned east back towards our airfield.
Now, was this considered a successful raid?
Yes, it was, because with the four squadrons of Hurricanes going in and covering a pretty wide area, I don't know what the total... damage was, and as far as 109 is concerned.
But the aircraft lost was considered worth the damage caused.
Well, yes, definitely. Although we lost 9 aircraft, and the pilots were missing at that time, some, 3 or 4 of them managed to get back. They crash landed in the Katara Depression. Others didn't. So, and I know that 2 were prisoners of war, and I think 2 were probably killed. So I don't... all I've got here is 9 pilots missing, but we didn't lose them all.
Now, what was it like being under flak fire? We haven't really talked about that much yet. I mean, you know, this light and heavy flak. What was it? What could you see? What was it like?
Well, the light flak, of course, was usually sort of machine gun fire and probably cannon fire, that sort of calibre. Whereas there's pointless trying to use heavy flak at the level we were at.
So it was just machine guns. Did you see the tracer, or just aware it was there without really...
No, I couldn't see the tracer. But, I was hit, so it was coming up somewhere where we were.
And you weren't sure that was by the ME-109s?
No, it wasn't an ME-109.
Oh, right.
No.
So it was ground fire. Yeah. How much damage was done to your aircraft?
Not a great deal. It was, I was hit in the fuselage behind the cockpit.
That was on the 9th, I think. Yes, 9th of October.
Yes.
Any other big raids you remember?
Well, the next day, we did a search of the Katara Depression, looking for missing pilots from that strafing show. We found a couple of crashed, or Hurricanes that had crash-landed, and those chaps got away with it. We didn't lose all the 9, but it was quite lively, quite a lively show.
So what's the next operation you recall? You seem to have gone on some more tactical reconnaissance.
Yes.
Various, you know...
Yes. Then after that...
Did you have any strike contacts with Stukas?
Yes.
At this stage, or at it later?
See, on the 14th of October, we did a reconnaissance over what we called the northern sector. And the flak was extremely heavy and accurate. Some 109s were seen and were attacked by number 1 South African squadron, who destroyed 1. Then the next day
What exactly were you doing on a tactical reconnaissance flight? I should have asked you the first
time. Well, we used to fly over the troops and further back, over the German lines, to have a look, see, perhaps draw out some of their fighters and get into combat with them.
Would you photograph what was going on? I mean, it's a reconnaissance party.
No, we didn't have any photographic.
So, would you just take note of things?
Yes,
you saw?
Yes, just a visual.
Now, the next thing is that the 23rd of October seems to be you've got a reconnaissance there. And you change airstrip, I think.
Yes, on the 23rd of
October. You go and find a new airstrip, don't you?
Yes, just a minute.
If that's the next thing you remember, I mean, yes. Anything else you want to talk about?
On the 22nd of October, I went up to the new airstrip. We called them landing grounds, LG.
Now, were you the person who'd located this? Because it seems to me that you actually found this book, this airstrip, in the book. I don't know that.
Well, they told me where it was, and to go and have a look at it. And I landed there, and it was okay. So then I was only there for a short while, and I came back again to our own airfield. It was 20 minutes flying time away from where we were.
We're still in the El Alamein area.
Oh, yes, yeah. Then that was on the 22nd of October. On the 23rd of October, the whole squadron moved up to this landing ground. They were given numbers, and this was 172. And we were there, ready for the push, and it started overnight with a colossal army. I think every gun they had, they were firing. An artillery barrage. Terrific. All night it went on. It was really, they think it was the heaviest artillery barrage the British Army has ever been involved in. And of course Montgomery had taken over at that time, not long before, you see. And he changed things a bit. And that was a night, a barrage. And we took off in the darkness in the morning to be over the front line to try to protect the army just as soon as daylight broke. And we did a patrol of the line, protecting the army push in the north. And I got here, 4 109s were seen above, but they did not attempt to attack us. But there was a small amount of accurate flak. And that was.
Do you remember anything about that patrol? I mean, yeah, that's what you wrote in your log at the time.
Yeah,
do you remember that at all? Do you remember what happened to you?
I did so many trips, I can't remember. It's almost details of every trip.
No. So you were patrolling. We on a series of patrols above the offensive.
We were above protecting the army. That was the object of our exercise. Well, the same day, I did another patrol of the line, and we were intercepted by 15 Messerschmitt 109s and the Italian 202, Marquis 202, on reaching the line at Alamein. And then a terrific dogfight ensued, and I got a 109 damaged. Everybody okay. Bags of activity on the ground. I should think some of the other chaps must have got some aircraft as well. Anyway, I got a 109, which was damaged.
And do you remember what was a dogfight like that like? I mean, you talk about that in the book a bit. Was it any different there to what you've been used to in France, you know?
Yes, it was more concentrated from the point of view of the area concerned. Because, first of all, the line was only 30 miles long, and we were operating over the northern part mainly, because more British. Down south, there was some South Africans, and I think someone else, another nation. Anyway, our chaps were up in the northern half, by the Mediterranean down from the coastline.
Now, what were your tactics in a dogfight at this stage, or a clash? What would you personally do? What were your tactics?
Well, if you...
I presume they weren't different from other people's, but I mean, what would you do?
Well, if you got into a dogfight, then it was... You're looking after yourself and trying to shoot aircraft down and prevent your, stop yourself getting shot down. Combination of the two.
So you wouldn't fire... It was very, very much quick firing and not able to see what was happening properly.
Not everywhere, no, because you were so concentrating on your own aircraft that you were firing at, or trying to evade, taking evasive action if someone behind you firing at you. So it was a bit of a mixture.
What evasive action would you take? I mean, would you spin or just dive?
Oh, no, you wouldn't spin.
What would you do?
No, you just do steep, very steep turns, tight turns, and then perhaps go around that and then go the other way. So, because the 109s couldn't stay with the Hurricane on turns, although they were slightly faster, they didn't have the same manoeuvrability.
That was always a tactic, a steep, a sharp turn.
Yeah.
What's the next thing you remember? That was quite a lot of fighting on the patrol on the 24th.
Yes, that was the two. Flights on the 24th, which I've just told you about. The next flight I did was on the 27th.
Now this is against the Germans launch a bit of an aerial counterattack, don't they? Tell us what happens there.
On the 27th, we did a patrol of the line, and we were in the leading squadron. And number one, South African squadron, the two squadrons. The South African squadron was the other one. And four 202s seen above, they didn't come down. They were the Italians. Small amount of heavy flak, but plenty of activity on the ground. So you could see the army were very active.
But you weren't particularly involved in this. You didn't get to grips with them on that particular occasion.
No, not on that particular one. But then the next day on the 28th, I led the squadron on line patrol with number one South African Air Force as top cover to us. So we were doing the lower level. And we saw 12 plus 109s and 202s were seen. Number one South African Air Force was attacked, but no claims, no losses. And the next day on the 29th, we did a scramble. We were asked to get off very quickly. And we did a patrol of the line with number 238 squadron as top cover, and I led the squadron again. You see, I hadn't been in the desert all that long, less than a month, but with my previous experience, I was leading the squadron.
Was that a matter of considerable pride, I would imagine, that you were in this position?
Yes, yeah. So on that... on the 29th, several 109s reported, but only four were seen. They were 109s reported by the ground radar. 20 Kitty Hawks dive bombed in the northern sector, and I've got good bombings. We saw them doing their bomb. They were doing this dive bombing, and they were very good. Then on the 29th. And of October, and on the 30th or 31st, I was posted to number 238 squadron as a flight commander.
Now, how did you feel about that?
Well, I was.
Were you happy with 33?
Oh, I was very happy with 33 squadron, but I was also very happy to know that I was going to 238 squadron, because the commanding officer was an old chum of mine named Roy Marples. And I'd known him back in the UK. We always got on very well together. And so I was very happy about that.
Now, where were 238 squadron?
Oh, all in the same airfield. One of the four squadrons, you see. There was,
of course they were. Well, they were on LG-172 as well.
Oh, yes.
Now, what did you think of... Tell us what Roy Marples was like. I don't think we've mentioned Roy Marples. What did he like as a chap and as a squadron leader?
He was very good in both respects. And I've got a jolly good photograph of him, if you want to see it.
But not that well, because they can't see it, you see. We're going to try and arrange to get copies of some of your photographs later today.
Yes.
So what was he like? What did
he was a live wire.
What do you mean by that?
Well, he used to enjoy, he had a good sense of humour, and he used to enjoy a bit of fun in various ways.
He'd lead you in the air, would he? He'd go up?
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, yes, he used to fly. Yeah.
And what was the role? You were a flight commander. What was the role of flight commander? You were senior.
Well, you know that in a squadron, you're divided into two flights, A flight and B flight. And I was posted to command A flight in 238 Squadron.
And what did that entail? What did the flight commander, what was his job?
Advising the younger pilots about various operational aspects of flying, taking them up and briefing them before you went, saying, unless it was a scramble, if you had time to brief them and told them what you expected from them, and then when you land back, you'd have a debrief and tell them, there you go, that was very good, what you want to do, a bit more of this or a bit more of that or whatever. So with the experience that you have, this is 42, so my experience went back over 4 years. So it was useful to have that experience, to be able to impart the knowledge that one gained to some of these younger, or not always younger, but certainly less experienced.
Now, did you have also a role dealing with ground crew, or was that...
Oh, yes, yes, and you had to, each flight had its own ground crew staff, fitters and riggers. Fitters did the engines, riggers did the airframes, and then you had other chaps who were specialists in instruments, and they were tending to the oxygen resupplies, and various other things. They looked after the instruments in the cockpit, make sure everything was working there. So they were all specialists in their own field. And you had a flight sergeant, sergeant was it, I don't know, as the senior NCO in charge of each flight.
So, and how did you get on with him? I don't suppose you remember his name, do you?
No, I don't remember his name now. But I used to get on well with them. And
what was the flight? So the flight sergeant. How would you liaise with him? How did you share that?
Oh, you know, we used to talk in a very friendly manner, and give them information about any aircraft. And then they used to say, "We say, look, can you let us have 6 aircraft ready for on the line tomorrow morning?" You say, yes, we'll do our utmost sort of thing. Or anything connected with the engineering and ground servicing side of the aircraft.